SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, Scott Miller is our baseball insider. You see his columns in the New York Times. You see him on Coast to Coast regularly talking baseball with us. And I got to tell you, Scott, it's good to see you in San Diego, where my son is. I'm always jealous that you're there. But actually, I was just saying to Dane, my co-host, that and look at that giant cat on him. That was awesome.
The cat snuck in. I apologize. She's a baseball fan, and she keeps me company. I can move her.
That is awesome. Anyway, so I was just telling Dane, you know, we've had sunny skies here, literally cloudless skies, San Diego skies in New York for 60 days in a row. We haven't had rain in 60 days. We have had wow. Sunshine in 60 days. And I mean, I have never seen that in my life in New York City, where we haven't had rain or some kind of crappy weather or stretches of bad weather. It has been beautiful. All the playoff games were perfect weather at Citi Field and in the Bronx. And I'm hearing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it's going to be more of the same in the Boogie Down, in the Bronx Zoo for games 3, 4, and 5. So you've got nothing on us, San Diego.
We'll take it, man. We need that. That'd be awesome. I mean, that's the one thing about the expanded playoffs, right? The season goes so late. The World Series may go into November again. And you're always worried because it's the top moment in baseball. And you want the game, the condition should be for the two teams to be at their best. In those years when it's 40 degrees, and remember the Chicago Cubs, Joe Maddon and company are wearing those ski hats. That's just not a good look for baseball, let alone you go back to 06 World Series. Remember how it was Detroit and St. Louis, and it was rainy and raw, and the Detroit pitchers kept throwing the ball all over the infield. I mean, that's not how the World Series should be played. So bring on the warm weather in New York next week. Let's have baseball weather. Let's get a good World Series.
What did you think when you saw the Mets come back to Los Angeles for game 6 and the Dodgers still put 10 on them? And it was like every game in the championship series, there were so many runs and so many homers and big hits and massive blowouts. I mean, what did you think when you saw him do it to him again? Because the Mets had jumped out to a 1-0 lead and they still got beat down.
Yeah, I mean, it's always important, especially when you're facing elimination. You talk to any manager, they'll always say it's really important to score first. It takes a little bit of the pressure off of us. It gets us feeling good about ourselves. It gets us out quick. Mets did that and it just did matter. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't a very good series. You're right. I mean, all the games are decided, you know, by 6 runs, by whatever runs. And, you know, I mean, every series now we get bullpen games, which also is not a good look for baseball, but that's where we are. And the problem with bullpen games, I mean, sometimes, like the bullpen game the Dodgers ran against the Padres in game 4 or 3 of the division series, those pitchers were lights out. Padres couldn't touch them. But then when the, you know, Dodgers ran the bullpen game against the Mets in game 2, the Mets clobbered them. And then, you know, Mets get into their bullpen, Dodgers clobber them. You just, two things are pertinent right now in modern day baseball. And we see it play out in the playoffs and in the World Series. The games are going to be decided by the bullpen because starting pitchers just don't go deep enough into games, mostly, to where they have an effect. I mean, you know, a guy leaves a game after 5 innings or 4 innings, and there's going to be more scoring. So it's bullpens will decide it. And despite 6 most valuable player awards in this World Series and Ohtani and Judge and Soto, it's going to be who has the best bullpen, I think, who wins the series. Secondly, bullpens are the most volatile part of a team because, you know, you just never know year to year and sometimes game to game what you're going to get. And when you run out 6, 7 relievers, 1 or 2 are bound to have a bad day. And also when I talk about volatility, just look at Cleveland against the Yankees. Emmanuel Clase, he was like the Mariano Rivera of this year just for 1 year. He was the best pitcher in the majors, closer. He was locked down. Nobody could touch him. And then the Yankees beat him like he was the
27th. Him. Oh. They lit him up. They tortured him. He'll never be the same. Listen, I heard, all I heard was that, you know, as this series was starting, was that Class A was better than Mariano Rivera. Pah! Are you kidding me? Like, don't get me started. Don't make me laugh. No one is better than Mariano Rivera. You cannot gauge one season of excellent bullpen closing to the career that Mariano Rivera had. It's not even worth discussing. They tortured him. And what did you think when you saw that Soto hit that three-run bomb in the 10th inning? I mean, you talk about clutch in money time. That at bat, that seven-pitch at bat, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. I'm going to pick up on the last thing you said. You're right. One great season as a closer doesn't compare you to Mariano Rivera. And I would add to that, Mariano also did it all of those October. So it's not just season, but you got to step up in October too. If you're going to be a legend, if you're going to be an all-timer, if you're going to be legit, Class A didn't do that either. So that leads to the Soto home run against Class A. It was a classic at bat. It was classic Juan Soto. You know, watch the strike zone. Don't go out of the strike zone. Make the pitcher work and then tee off on him. And you saw in that at bat why the Yankees have loved him all season long, why he's had the success he's had in his career other than his time in San Diego, which And also in that one at bat.
It wasn't that bad in San Diego. He hit 35 home runs. And by the way, he hit it off Gattis. It was the Class A shots of Judge, the two-run shot off Class A.
That's right.
And then Stanton, the go-ahead home run. And they still lost that game with the ninth inning and 10th inning heroics of the Guardians bats. And then the Yankees went out and won the next two games and finished them off on the Soto shot. It was unbelievable. The Yankees tortured Cleveland's bullpen that entire series. They tortured them.
Exactly right. And that goes back to what I said about this World Series, Yankees-Dodgers, going to be won by a bullpen. Just like the Yankees-Cleveland series was won or lost by a bullpen. The Cleveland bullpen, really good all year, one of the best in baseball, no match for the Yankees. They teed off on the bullpen. So, you know, now they're in the World Series. We'll see if they can tee off on the Dodgers bullpen or vice versa, if the Dodgers can get to the Yankees bullpen. But it's interesting because, you know, both teams have had to shuffle their bullpens this year, right? Clay Holmes blew 13 saves.
Right.
Yankees had put Luke Weaver in there. The Dodgers had Evan Phillips as their closer. He stumbled. They had to shift some things. They've had injuries. Now they got Michael Kopech at the trade deadline. Kopech sometimes is their closer. Sometimes he comes in the third inning. So there's going to be a lot of pressure.
Sometimes he starts. He started the other day in game six.
Yeah, it's like as the opener. Yeah. It's back to old times for him.
He was wild.
Yeah, he did. That didn't go well.
So I got 40 seconds. 78 and 81 World Series are unforgettable. Here we go again after 40-plus years between these two. Who do you like in the series, and hopefully we can talk to you throughout the series?
Yeah. I'm going to say Dodgers in seven. I think it's a coin flip.
I never liked you, Scott Miller, running on my Yankees like this. Backstabber, you and all your Southern California friends can have a sandwich. Go play with your cat. Stay away from me. Make sure you don't put him on the rest of the series, Mafia. This guy's a turncoat. I never liked him.
I thought we were going to talk all series long. Come on, man.
We will. Scott, I love you, buddy. I'll see you.
You
thanks.
Too. Thanks, Scott.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Dane's talking about how much sex he has. It's just unbelievable. Like, I'm trying to do a show here, and, you know, I knew he had a kid and everything, and I just can't believe he's getting the volume that he's talking about. Are we on the air? Don't talk about Dane's love. Okay. All right, let's pick it up with Dave Roberts then. What is he saying? I don't like him either. You notice I'm not putting up with this guy, Miller, either, with all of his Southern California. If it was the Padres, he's even worse with them. He's a homerized milquetoast.
Well, listen, here's the thing. I gotta stop you right there, Scotty, for a second. I love you, Scotty. I admire you. I want to be like you when I grow up in many ways. But how did you not get a pick from Scott Miller's cat in the last segment, my friend?
I mean, honestly, did you see the thing roll over his shoulders? I was like, what is that? Is that a cat? What is happening here?
We do have to talk about the World Series Game 1 in Chavez Ravine tomorrow night. Blue chip World Series Yankees and Dodgers. And like you said, we've got Dave Roberts talking about picking Flaherty to start Game 1.
Well, I think that, you know, it's been good. Obviously, the experience, the way to kind of navigate an outing, he's seen it all. And, you know, even looking at his last start in New York, I think that, you know, self-admitted that certain parts of that game sped up on him. And I think that's a lesson to be learned. And so I think that with Jack, the experience, that's another experience moment for him that I think that can kind of help him in this series right now. So I think that, you know, we got through it. We weathered it. No pun intended. I think he's healthy now. And he'll spit out a good one on Friday.
Yeah, whatever. Like, I hope he has an awful Friday. How's that sound? I hope they light him up, and I hope they swing away at his stuff and tee off on him. Look, here's the deal. You already know what's happening here. The Yankees' big money guy's going. And yep. I think Flaherty was their big pickup, but Yamamoto's their big money guy. And he's going to go in game two. The Yankees' big money guy, the Cy Young winner, is going in game one in Chavez Ravine. And let's see if he can get that, you know, that fastball of his cooking, that four-seamer. He's you know, the thing with me is, Dane, I think that he's an on-off switch. He'll be on one day.
Yep.
He'll be unhittable. And then the next day, he's awful and gives up home runs. He's never, to me, always consistent. Like, I thought his last outing was, you know, four innings and a third. I thought it was weak.
Yeah, so that I agree with you. You know, it's what version of Gerrit Cole are we going to get? You know what the biggest problem for me in this series, and it's great, right? It's a blue chip series. It's going to be epic. LA, New York, Dodgers, Yankees. You can't ask for anything more historic. My problem with Dave Roberts as the manager there, Scotty, and any Yankees fan knows, is we're going to be subjected to watching Dave Roberts steal a base with the Boston Red Sox in game four. How many times, if I had to set an over-under on how many times they're going to show that clip in the next week and a half, it might be double digits, and that's going to stir up post-traumatic stress for me.
Yes.
That's the part I don't like about this. That's the problem, right? We're going to see it so many times, but I digress. This is clearly shaping up to be a classic series, and we've got Aaron Boone talking about just that here. Epic matchup.
I'm sure there'll be that, you know, in the world, like I'm sure the amount of people watching and paying attention, probably you're going to draw on even more people that will watch this World Series than would otherwise watch the World Series. So you're talking about a greater pool of people that will be interested in this. So we understand that. But for us, it's, you know, like we feel like we're going on a business trip tomorrow. You know, it's whether we're playing the Dodgers or whoever we are, to be able to get to the World Series and have a chance to play for a world championship, you know, that's what you work so hard for. To have that opportunity. So I don't think it really changes much for us. You know, obviously you understand there'll be more eyeballs on it, but honestly, it doesn't really change much for us.
I don't believe that for one minute. There is a history.
Yep.
There is a long history of these two teams, the biggest brands in baseball.
Yep.
Without a doubt, unequivocally. Yeah. That they're meeting in the World Series again. This is what it's all about. This is bigger than that nonsense he just spit out of his mouth spitting, because he's tripping like a business trip just another day, like a ridiculous comment. The bottom line is he knows how big this is.
Yep.
He knows that it's the Yankees and the Dodgers and more people are watching. Well, damn straight more people are watching. And not only that, they're going to be watching in the Far East because of Ohtani and Yamamoto. And Everyone and their brother and mother and sister and cousin and aunt are going to watch the World Series because it's the Dodgers and Yankees, just like it was in 78 when I was a kid and 81 as well when Fernando Mania and the Dodgers beat the Yankees. So I don't want to hear it. It is look, some people around here were like, oh, we just won a Subway Series. We've already been down that road. The Yankees kicked their ass. What I wanted to see all year, I wanted to see it last year, was Dodgers Yankees.
Absolutely. Prohibitive favorites, whether it was Fernando Mania or, ladies and gentlemen, the Bronx is burning. So let's get to game one here. We already know it's going to be Cole on the bump for the Yankees. It's going to be Flaherty on the hill for the Dodgers. Gerrit Cole, one of only four pitchers in Major League Baseball history to have a sub-3 ERA across 20 playoff starts. You see the odds here for game one. What do you think? How does it start, Scotty?
Yeah, look, I got to take Cole and I got to take the Yankees. And I'll tell you why. Cole is a stud in postseason games. This is what he's lived for his whole life, to pitch in a World Series for the New York Yankees since he's a little boy. This is all this guy has ever dreamed of. That's all he ever talks about. And here it is. And he's in Southern California, perfect weather, great ballpark, and a baseball stadium that the facts remain. Judge and Stanton terrorize this place. They absolutely go off. I think some of that has to do with Judge growing up there. That, you know, I'm sure as a kid he was like, oh my God, right. Dodger Stadium. Right. Someday I'm going to play in Dodger Stadium. And sure enough, he is in the World Series. And I'll tell you what, I don't care if he broke his toe there. His numbers batting there are phenomenal. And Stanton's are even better. And not only that, he hit a ball out of Dodger Stadium when he played for the Marlins. He has been a postseason just ruthless badass, and Soto already is. Give me the Yankees in game one. Let's go.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Mavi is yelling at me again on the set. You can tell when he's in a bad mood, when I'm talking about bad things, and he's just not having it. There's just no time for it. I'm taking the Yankees in game one. What do you got? You got some World Series odds for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's broaden this conversation out to the series already. The Dodgers are small favorites. Most people think this is a coin flip. I got a question for you, though, Scott. Do you see the Dodgers there, -122 for the series? The Yankees come back at +104. I am considering doing something, and I want your take. I call it the emotional hedge. Do I, as a big-time Yankees fan, do I bet a significant amount of money on the Dodgers to win the World Series? This way, either I win a good chunk of change, or I get a parade in the Canyon of Heroes that I haven't had for 15 years, and I feel like I come out ahead either way. Is that just messing with karma, or do you subscribe to this kind of theory?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. It makes sense because, you know, all I've heard is that the Dodgers are going to win the World Series, that they're better than the Yankees, and it's just not true. They're not better than them. I think they're mirrored images of one another. Yeah. I think they're both the same thing. I think they're the favorites all year, and they both lived up to it. I think the Yankees had their downturns. I think, you know, and I don't really feel like the Dodgers did that was noticeable, but they actually did go through a realm where the Padres got close to them, got within three games of them. And so they had their moments as well, but they both came through it. I thought the Padres had the Dodgers by the onions in the playoffs, and they blew it. And so the Dodgers got past the Mets, and here they are. And now all of a sudden everybody thinks they're so much better than the Yankees. Well, the bottom line is, if you ask me, the Yankees kicked the Royals and the Guardians' ass, and I think they're playing better. The top of their order, Dane, from one to, you know, five, has been fantastic. Huge numbers, huge productivity. Getting on base right away, first inning, Gleyber Day, Soto knocking him in. It was just consistent. I think they're more dangerous, in my opinion, that they're playing more dangerous. I thought that the way that the Dodgers kicked the Mets' ass was phenomenal. So they're both really good. I think your bet makes sense. You'll win money, or you'll be happy that the Yankees win. Because if you lose, if you bet on the Yankees and lose, and they lose and you lose money, that'll suck.
Right, right. I would only do it as the emotional hedge. But let's pick out some props here. Like, for example, we know there are true studs in both of these lineups, right? The top four hitters in Major League Baseball in terms of exit velocity are in this series. So I asked you, Scott, who's going to hit the most home runs in this World Series? You got Shohei Ohtani as the favorite, Judge, Stanton, Soto, all the way down to Muncy. A guy like Teoscar Hernandez is interesting to me at 13-1. My money's on Juan Soto hitting some into the right field short porch at plus 750. What do you say?
I'm not arguing with that at all. I'm the exact same feeling as you. You put it up, and the first thing I said to myself was Soto. I think he is the clutchest baseball player in the show. That's just all there is to it. Now, I don't deny what Ohtani and Judge did. So when you have 58 and 144, you're a badass. But then.
Oh, sure.
But then in the playoffs, he's really been average. In fact, I think Judge has been way below average in the postseason. And I think Ohtani has been brilliant. You hit 81% with runners on base. The guy hit .818. I've never seen that before in my life. So Ohtani clearly better in the postseason than Judge. But when it comes to clutch and home runs, it's Soto for me. And I'll tell you another thing. I put Stanton number two on that list because what he's done in his career as a Yankee in the postseason is, you know, Babe Ruthian. And then what Soto's done already with the Nationals and now with the Yankees in the postseason is crazy. That three-run shot in the 10th was crazy. Here's another thing. You heard me talking to Miller. These people in San Diego, now, there's no place, as you and I both know, that I love more than San Diego. It's my favorite spot in this country, bar none, top shelf. Nothing else compares. But let me tell you something. His 35 home runs last year in San Diego wasn't enough for you people. Have a sandwich.
Yeah, really. I mean, come on.
Have a sandwich. No, like, you don't have dudes hitting 35 home runs every year out there. Have a sandwich.
I completely agree.
So screw you. I'm with you on Soto. And then I would put Stanton second because there's something about him. He's a freak in these big moments.
And here's the other thing. When Soto hit that bomb to end the ALCS, did you see Cashman's face? Because the price just went up on him in the offseason.
I don't care.
These are the kind of memories that make him want to stay a Yankee, Scotty.
Of course. Of course it is. And I don't care about Hal and Brian's money problems. They don't have money problems.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, so Spitten, what are they saying about strikeouts for this series?
Yeah, so we had the props for the most home runs. We agreed. Let's see if we do it again. Most strikeouts in the series. You see Flaherty and Cole at the top. I'm actually liking that plus 440 for Yamamoto, if you want to know the truth, right? He's going to get two starts, in my opinion, as well, games 2 and 6. And the Yankees have never seen Yamamoto before, right? Flaherty was in the American League for a while, and I just like the number as a bigger favorite. That guy throws gas. We knew when he came over. I like Yamamoto at plus 440 in this market.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. And I'll also take a flyer on Bueller. Look, I thought Bueller at Citi Field was just Sid Vicious. And he had that look. He had that cockiness to him that he used to have where he was like, you know, I'm only here for big games. I don't care about nothing else. Give me the ball in a big game. I'm your guy. And he was out there lit. And he was throwing it, and he was getting guys in droves. So at that price, at 14-1, you know they're going to see him in the Bronx. It's coming. He's pitching game 3 at the very least. One of those games in the Zoo, definitely pitching in the Boogie Down. So at that price, listen, that guy can strike guys out when his stuff is moving like that. Like, did you see how it was moving at Citi Field? Mm-hmm. My God, they couldn't hit him.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I lean towards the guys that are going to be starting in games 1 and game 2 because I think they will get two starts in the series, you know, and I could be more confident about that. But you're right. Bueller is a dog, and we'll see. We'll see what happens because if he goes game 3, maybe he goes game 7. Listen, earlier in the show, Scotty.
That'll happen. If this thing goes 7, you're going to see Bueller twice.
Yeah, it's probably true, but hopefully I get a little Yankees in six and I ain't got to worry about it. But I digress.
So.
Listen, you were talking with Scott Miller earlier on about kind of the just the historic nature, right? Kind of the idea, the PR rating for this series, right? Historic franchises, obviously. And check this out. It's playing itself out in a lot of different ways. I mean, the average ticket price now, it looks like to see Yankees-Dodgers is over $1,700. That would break a record. And already we have the league championship series being viewed by more people kind of ever or than in 7 years. So can you imagine, like you were saying, when it's Yankees, Dodgers, and especially with guys like Otani and Yamamoto, what kind of numbers this is going to do kind of in the Far East as well?
Bro, it's going to be enormous. And, you know, Gabe is going to game one Friday at Dodger
nice.
Stadium, and he paid $1,300 to sit in the, I think, fifth
wow.
row to right field corner in the bleachers. So, and then we looked at Yankee Stadium, and the highest seat in the upper deck in the last row was 1,000, and in the right field porch between 5 and 15 rows in was it was already $1,800, and that was before either championship series was over. He bought his World Series ticket to game one while they were still playing the Mets in game six. He bought it like that day for the World Series. He said, well, if they win, they're going to start Friday. So I'm going to buy a ticket to Friday's game. And his ticket was $1,300.
Wow. I mean, listen, I as soon as the Yankees won the LCS, I put in my mind, like, what would I be willing to pay, right, to go ahead and be in the building for one of those games? And then I saw something similar. I saw like $1,400, $1,500, and I just couldn't pull the trigger on it, you know? I will tell you this, though. I'm a born New Yorker, right? Born and raised. Back in 94, you'd like this, Scotty. I'm probably putting him on blast, so I'm sorry, Uncle Emilio. But this was when the Knicks and the Rangers were in Madison Square Garden. My uncle was a cop. Okay. And he would literally just walk into the garden in his full uniform. No one would stop him because he just walked in like he belonged there. Then he'd go to the bathroom, change clothes, and he was in the building for all of the Knicks and Rangers games.
That's
in 94.
Crazy.
If I had the ability to do that
and
not pay $1,500, I would do that. But yeah, he just walked in like he belonged and nobody stopped him because he was in his full uniform.
That's
wish
brilliant.
I could do that, but I can't. Let me ask you this also.
That's the coolest relative ever.
I'm saying.
That guy's a genius.
No, it was awesome. It was awesome. I admired him when I was in my teenage years back in the day.
I still admire him.
Here's the thing I'm afraid of, Scotty. As a Yankee guy, you remember this. You remember in like 01 against Arizona when it was in game seven, it was Schilling and then Randy Johnson, right? Here's what I'm worried about. Can you imagine if we're in game seven and it's tight, right? And the fans are going crazy. It's like 3-2. And then all of a sudden, Otani walks out to the bullpen and they give him like an inning or two. That place is going to go absolutely bonkers if that was to be the case. Now, I know they've come out and said they don't think he can do it, but I've seen footage of him throwing sessions in the last month. And we're already talking about how the bullpens are going to win this series. There's going to be a bullpen game. I would not be surprised if with everything on the line, they run Otani out there on the hill.
Yeah, listen, everything was going great today. I was having a good time.
Listen, I don't want it to happen. I'm just saying, that's in their back pocket,
like,
man.
It's like a train derailment over here. You're telling me that they're going to bring Otani out to pitch and end our season. It's just
I didn't say it's going to work. I just said that could be a little additive. That'll put some juice in the building, would it not? I'm not saying it's going to work.
It would. I don't want to hear that because, of course, it would, and it'll ruin everything. All of our plans will go down the drain. I'll blame you. I will blame you.
All right, you can blame me if you want, but let's talk about the little brother here in New York. The New York Mets, David Stearns just says that the Mets ran out of gas after having to push so hard since June just to make the playoffs, but that the team expects to have a really active offseason with a focus on the starting rotation. We talked about it before. They better focus on the rotation because guess what? They're not going to land our boy Juan Soto. He's coming back because he's seeing what the Bronx Zoo is like, what it looks like to be good with the Yankees. Why would he go across over to Flushing to just be the little brother?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And look, once you do what he's done for the Yankees, and now he's playing for a world championship with the Yankees, and they're going to give him the money he wants, that'll be that. But I'll tell you this, I think what the guy said Stearns about the Mets is kind of pathetic. Like, they didn't run out of gas. They were in the NLCS playing for it every day. Right. And the bottom line is they got their ass beat by the Dodgers bats. They just scored too many runs, 40-26 in runs. They scored 8-10 runs every game. And the Mets had really one good game to stay alive. They survived that, you know, that game five to go back to L.A., but they got their ass beat. They didn't run out of gas. They got beat. And I think that so you're telling me if they would have won game six and game seven, they'd be too tired to play the Yankees in the World Series? It's ridiculous. They didn't run out of steam to get to the playoffs. They used so much energy. Come on. They were the best team in baseball since June 1st, and crying that they were tired or something is kind of, I think it's kind of femmy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And listen, were they going to say they ran out of gas? Like, they certainly had enough gas to take care of the Padres, who, like you were talking about, was a team that, you know, deserved consideration, giving the Dodgers a scare in the NL West. So all of a sudden, when they were able to advance in the playoffs, right, then no one was talking about their gas tank at that point, right? So this, right, to me, is crying over spilt milk in the same way. You know, I thought in June that they were going to sell Alonso, that they were going to sell some of their arms, and they had a nice run. Give them credit. Whether they ran out of gas or not, they made it to the LCS, and then they got beat by a better team. Period. End of story.
I think they're about, I'd say 80 to 90% of their free agents are gone. We went through the list yesterday, and I think literally, you know, Winker, I don't think goes anywhere, and because I think they can afford him. And then I think they'll probably screw up the Alonso deal and let him go. So I'd be concerned about, you know, I really don't care. The list of like Bader and Ottavino and all these guys, Stanek, they're awful anyway. Get rid of them. I don't have a problem with who they're going to lose in free agency. I think Winker makes sense. I think Alonso makes sense to stay, but they don't want to pay him, and he never has wanted to pay him, which I think is a mistake, but we'll see what they end up looking like next year. They're finished. The Yankees are in the World Series. You lose.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, so we finally shift off of the World Series and start talking about Pain Day because we've got football tonight, believe it or not, in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. Week 8 in the NFL gets started tonight. Minnesota and the Rams. Big time for the Rams. Both Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are expected back for the Rams. Still, Minnesota, a 2.5-point favorite. 48.5 is the total here. We have Vikings quarterback, who's really been one of the surprises of the season, Sam Darnold, talk about returning to his home area for Thursday Night Football.
Challenging week for us. Obviously a great LA team. Sam just told me too, I'm excited to go home for the first time with fans in attendance. I went back in 2020. Just excited to play these guys. Another really great opportunity for us to go and play a really good defense, a really good team. Very, very excited for this opportunity on a short week.
Look, I thought they met their maker on Sunday in Minneapolis, and the Lions, I think, are better than the Vikings. And the Vikings could have easily won that game, but they didn't. The Lions found a way, and I think that's why they're favored to win the NFC. And I know a lot of people think it's automatic, it's the Niners. Let's face facts. I'll give you the Niners beat them. I'll give it to you. Fair enough. But they had no business beating the Lions in that game last year. The Lions blew that as bad as the Falcons blew the Super Bowl to Brady. Up 25 points at the half. You cannot lose a game like that. That is the most embarrassing game in the history of the NFL. And I got to tell you, I think the second worst game I've ever seen was the Lions blowing that game against the Niners. The Niners are not as good, and you've already seen it, as the Lions this year. The Lions are the cream. And they went to Minnesota and they beat them. And they were undefeated. Now we'll see tonight, Dane, if they're, you know, for real. Like, are they gonna, like, remember the Saints? The Saints won two big games, scored almost 50 points, and then they lost five in a row. Will Minnesota reel off of that loss and lose again on the road to a Rams team, in my opinion, that stinks? I think this Rams team is awful. I mean, they played terrible. They blew that cover against the Raiders. I had the Raiders in seven, And I think the Raiders are one of the three worst teams in the league, frankly. And the Rams could barely beat them. But I'll give you this. If they have Puka Shells and Cutback, they're going to be effective because those guys can really run routes. And Stafford's amazing with those two receivers. They'll look like a different team tonight against the Vikings with those two active.
Yeah, I agree with you. Nakua Matata, it means no worries, right? But I'm also with you that the Detroit Lions are the best team in the NFC. I think they have one of the best offenses in the NFL. And don't look now, Jared Goff is completing 83% of his passes over the last four games. He's an MVP candidate, if you want to know the truth, at 7-1. And there's an interesting stat, Scotty. Teams the week after they play the Detroit Lions, they defecate the mattress against the spread. So keep that in mind as well. Matthew Stafford talking about the challenge of facing those Minnesota Vikings and especially that top tight defense.
You know, I think they're a really physical unit, physical and fast. Try to, you know, force their hand on the offense and play with a lot of confidence when they do that. You know, they've got a bunch of smart, savvy players in the back end and some guys up front that rush the passer and stop the run at a high level. So that combination is what makes them good.
Look, I think Flores has a good defense. I like O'Connell. I like their receivers. I think the Vikings are flat out better than the Rams, but I think it's a very dangerous game to bet. I've already said this week on C2C, I like the Vikings to get it done, but I won't do it without reservation.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about this one as well. I agree with you. The Vikings are a better team, but all of a sudden with Kupp and Nakua back, it could look a lot different. And I don't make it a habit to bet on the road team on Thursday night football, Scotty. So what are we doing here? You see the board. It's a 3-point favorite. 45.5 is what it says here. No, 48.5 is what I'm seeing now. Is there anything you like in this game that you haven't already given the people?
Yeah, no, you know, I think it's, you know, Vikings, I'm laying it. And what's the total? I don't
48.5. 48.5.
Yeah, listen, I think they can go over that number. They let it fly, these teams. Let's face facts. Both of these teams throw the ball nonstop. The Vikings have great receivers. So do the Rams. And both quarterbacks have great arms, and they know how to get it on. So let's see if, you know, let's face it, no one saw this coming from Darnold. He's never been good. Now all of a sudden the guy's throwing it all over the place, slinging it. And I think that's because of the routes that he's got from these receivers that they're running for him are giving him time and wide open space to hit. So that's why they've been so effective. And then defensively, Flores has all kinds of great schemes, and he certainly knows what he's doing, whether people like him or not, what he's done with his career. The guy can flat out coach defense. There's no doubt about it. So, look, I'm going to go high risk here with an over and the Vikings. It's just a high risk bet. That's all there is to it.
All right, fair enough. I might take the other side. I told you about teams after they played Detroit. I don't like the road team usually on Thursday night football. Let's get into some of the props. I'm in for Carver High, but we still have some of Carver's High's props for this game. We're going to put them up in a second. I'll tell you one that I like personally. Jordan Addison, not Justin Jefferson. Jordan Addison, who is the number two receiver for Minnesota. His receiving prop is only 40.5 yards in this one. I think they go over. Sam Darnold, you were talking about it. I think it's the play calling, Scotty. I think it's O'Connell calling plays that is really what's unlocked Sam Darnold here, if you want to know the truth. He has something like the most deep throws in the NFL, completing 60% of his deep throws. I think some of them are going to go to Addison, who plays the over-the-top role. I like Addison over 40.5 receiving yards. We have some of Carver's as well. I think we have his touchdown props that we'll get up here. Look, Cooper Kupp, first touchdown at 8-1. JJ getting in there. And then Tutu Atwell getting in. Although I will say, Carver probably put this one in before knowing that Kupp and Nakua would be back.
Yeah, I think you're right about that because Tutu was getting the burn before that. He'll get way less this time. But this guy has been hitting a hit Evans on Monday night at 9-1 for the first tutty. So I like his other two plays there without a doubt. I love your call on Addison. I think he'll have a big game. Not only that, I like him with an anytime tutty as well. And I want to see Puka Shells get back in the end zone. I want to see Stafford hit him for a tutty.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, so what's Mike McDaniel saying about Tua now?
Yeah, listen, it looks like we're going to see the return of Tua Tagovailoa after the concussion in week two. I got to tell you something, Scotty. I really do not understand why the NFL is not forcing this dude to wear the Guardian cap upon his return. Like, if there's one player in the NFL who needs to wear that great kazoo kind of Kelso Olerud kind of cap, isn't it Tua Tagovailoa? But he's going to come back and not play. Here we have head coach Mike McDaniel talking about why they kept Tua out even when they said he was symptom-free after the first day.
I think the most important thing is to understand the nature of which the decision is made. And the, you know, however people define symptoms, did he elaborate on that based upon, you know, it's pretty simple. Like, we maximize the amount of experts that their expertise is in the brain and the head, right? And then we do everything we can to make sure that all those things are available and our training staff works with players 100% of the time to do right by them.
Make him wear the Guardian cap.
And so as you're acquiring the information and as you're working through it, it's pretty simple when the medical experts are advising you to do one thing. The whole issue was that needed time to rest for, you know, that injury.
Look, I'm just going to say this. Like, you're right. So he's not wearing it, so there's no point in talking about it. He's not going to wear it. Here's the deal. They're going to rue the day that they let this guy keep getting hit and keep having concussions. And then one day when he's, you know, eating out of a feeding tube and sitting in a wheelchair and he's crippled and he's brain dead, then they'll all feel awful about the decisions they made. They're talking about all these experts and all these brain people that know better. Who in their right mind, if you're in the brain business or in the CTE business or in the concussion business or a doctor, who in their right mind is approving this guy to play football is what I want to know. Because you all have to be morons to let this guy. The guy obviously can't take a hit. Every time he gets hit, he ends up.
Yes. So it wasn't even that big of a hit, Scott, in week two.
What happens to you, kid? He said he'll play. He'd rather die than not play football. Well, then you'll get your wish.
It wasn't even that nasty of a hit that put him out in week two. I got to say it. It feels uncomfortable to me. However, all that said, Scotty, honestly, I think the Dolphins put up a big number against Arizona on Sunday. I mean, that Arizona pass defense is bottom five in the league. Tua led the NFL in passing. I have concerns about his long-term health, but if he's starting week eight, that means he's playing week eight, and I see 238.5 yards as his passing prop. He put up 330-something in week one, led the NFL in passing last year. All of a sudden, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and the boys are going to score again. So while I feel uncomfortable and icky about it, Scott, I'm betting over on Tua's passing yards on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I'll tell you one thing. It's their business. They're going to obviously let him play, and they're going to let the chips fall where they may. And it is, it's not our problem. It's not my problem. I'm not going to sit here and worry about this guy's brain damage and his future because he's already made his mind up that he's, you know, going to play football and thinks that it's not going to ruin his life. I believe it will. I'm sure everyone thinks I'm wrong. I'll tell you this much. Everyone I've ever known, and I know a lot of them, and I know a lot of people that have dementia, that have advanced dementia, that have died with Alzheimer's. I have a lot of experience with it. I'm telling you, nothing good is coming of this guy's multiple concussions and brain damage. Nothing good is coming of this. So have at it. Enjoy yourselves while you all make money and turn the other cheek and look away. The NFL, the only thing they care about is being sued. And so when they got away with that multi-billion dollar lawsuit by only paying $750 million to get rid of the problem and wash their hands of it, that's all that Goodell cared about. Same thing with Gary Bettman. He doesn't acknowledge concussions and brain damage and CT because he's a moron too. And you can quote me on that. So this kid is dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight. Have fun. I guarantee you he's going down again with another one. That'll be six. And how many are you going to let him have before he's dead?